Welcome, everyone, to episode 16 of True Crime All the Time. I'm Mike Ferguson, and with me, as always, is my partner in true crime, Mike Gibson. Gibby's sitting across the desk from me. Looks like he's all business today.
All business.
True crime business.
True crime business.
All the time.
All the time.
Hey, folks, if you haven't tried Audible yet, what are you waiting on? You've heard me talk about it for a while now. Audible offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre, from bestsellers to mysteries and thrillers, true crime, and more. Audible is the home of storytelling. You'll discover thousands of podcasts from popular favorites to exclusive new series. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. But members also get full access to a growing selection of included audiobooks, Audible originals, and podcasts, and you can download or stream those included titles all you want. And the Audible app is great. Makes it very easy to listen anytime, anywhere, whether you're traveling, working out, walking the dog, or just doing your chores. Right now, I'm listening to a thriller titled Then She Was Gone by Lisa Jewell. It's absolutely amazing. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/TCAT or text TCAT to 500-500. That's audible.com/TCATT or text TCAT to 500-500. So, you know, as we get started, I got to give a special shout out. We have two new Patreon supporters, Ryan and Anthony. So I want to give, you know, give them a big thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Also, don't forget our other podcast, True Crime All the Time Unsolved. We've got 5 or 6 episodes out now, so definitely check those out.
Good stuff.
Yeah, we've got some good ones out there. You know, check out our Facebook page by the same name, True Crime All the Time. Follow us on Twitter at TC All the Time. We love the interaction. We're getting a lot of emails. I actually got a voicemail the other day, Gibby.
Oh, did you?
That I wanted to play.
Okay.
But it was so garbled.
Oh.
That I couldn't understand it. So I don't know if the person that left it was
it male or female?
It was a female.
Okay.
And I think her name was Holly. So Holly, if you're listening and you left us a voicemail.
Send us another one.
Yeah, something happened. I don't know if it was your cell phone or our technology.
It made me nervous when you said it was a voicemail and you couldn't really hear it. I thought someone caught one of these guys we talk about in prison calling you, reaching out to you.
You're always wanting to talk to these guys in prison. Yeah. But Holly, if you're listening and that was you, send us another one because I felt bad. I really wanted to play it. All right, Gibbs, we've got a really good one today. Danny Harold Rowling, also known as the Gainesville Ripper, which is a pretty good nickname.
I mean, the Ripper, absolutely.
So Rowling was a confessed and convicted serial killer. He was also a rapist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he raped a lot of his victims and killed 5 students at the University of Florida. That's probably what he's most infamous for, but also killed 3 people in his hometown of Shreveport, Louisiana. And at one point, I think he admitted to trying to kill his dad.
Oh, wow.
So,
but as we'll find out, his dad was kind of a bad person.
Oh yeah, his dad was, you know, kind of a piece
kind of,
you know,
kind of made him what he ended up being. So
I think it led to, as we talk about a lot, his childhood played a big part. Let's hear a little bit about him.
He was this monster, and he really was. He didn't just kill people. He killed them in oftentimes in torturous manners. People have asked me a lot of times, why do you think he did it? He liked it.
That's scary.
That's just cold, man.
Right.
Because he liked it.
We're not talking about somebody that got mad one night because he found his wife cheating on him and killed some guy. This is a guy that, after being analyzed, and was found to have killed because he enjoyed killing.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't get any scarier than that.
No, he falls in line with some of the other ones we've done in the past.
So you mentioned his early life. That's something we always like to talk about. You know, he was born in 1954. His dad was James. His mom was Claudia. Now, this is something a little different that I don't think we've experienced before. His dad was a police officer. I don't know if we've had that yet on any of our cases.
I don't think we have.
But his dad was not a good guy. I mean, he beat Danny's mom, Claudia, on a regular basis and really started beating her within a couple of weeks of the marriage.
Yeah.
She was pregnant with Danny, was beating her at that point because he got angry that she got pregnant. Beat her throughout the marriage. She would leave him numerous times and then come back. It was kind of like a vicious cycle. She always ended up coming back. You know, when Danny was around five, his dad found a puppy and brought it home. And Danny really became fond of this dog because I don't think he had a lot else going, you know, at this point. But his dad constantly was beating the dog. This would come out, according to Danny Rowling later, and even neighbors,
sure,
you know, corroborated this. And his dad later killed the dog by just repeated torture. And it was said that the dog actually died in Rowling's arms.
Mm.
So, I mean, what, you know, what is that doing?
Sure, for his psyche.
To a five-year-old at that point.
Right.
Then at nine, his mom suffers a nervous breakdown.
Understandably.
Well, yeah, because she sounds like she went through some serious, you know, stuff as well. At this point, Rowling fails the third grade. And school counselors would describe him as suffering from an inferiority complex. He had aggressive tendencies. He had poor impulse control. You know, these are signs that, you know, things are not going well for him, for sure. This is something I know we've heard before. It was strongly recommended that Danny needed, like, a lot of counseling. And he never got any of it.
Never got it.
So, you know, again, we're not making excuses for Danny Rowling because this guy's a piece of shit.
Right.
But you do kind of have to paint the picture of what this guy's life was like, how he grew up, how much of this impacted what he grew to become. And he ends up failing the third grade again. I mean, that's something to fail the third grade twice. I mean, it's hard to fail the third grade anyway.
Once.
Because you're not expected to do a whole heck of a lot in third grade.
Right.
But to fail it twice.
That's saying something.
It is saying something. Now, if there's anybody out there that's failed third grade twice, I apologize, but...
Go ahead and email Mike.
Yeah, email me at truecrimeallthetime@gmail.com. So we fast forward to about 14 years old. Danny's 14. He starts getting into this vicious cycle of peeping into neighbors' windows.
Yeah.
And he's caught a couple times doing that. One time, his dad catches him and beats the living hell out of him. Danny attempts suicide at some point around this time, but he fails. Now, it's said that it's at this point that he's having dreams of people beating and torturing him. And he starts talking about having a demon within inside him. This is where the frog demon comes in.
The frog demon comes in.
Right.
Yeah.
He doesn't call it a frog demon, but you and I like to call it a frog demon. We'll find out later what he calls his. But so, again, this is kind of broken record stuff because in 71, he enlists in the Air Force. How many of these have we done that kind of follow this path?
Yeah.
Right? Bad childhood, enlist in the service.
Oh, we just did Lake and Ing not too long ago and had that same issue.
Yeah, we've had a lot of them. Yeah. It's becoming a pattern. He actually wanted to get into the Navy and he failed. He couldn't get into the Navy, so his second choice was the Air Force. And by all accounts, all he did was a ton of drugs while he was in there. And they ultimately forced him out. after being charged with drug possession and I think disobeying orders or something like that. So he's drummed out of the service. A few years later, he gets married to a woman. Her name is, it's a strange name. It's Omatha Hauko. I can't say I've ever heard that name.
No, I can't either.
And I could be butchering it beyond all belief. But,
probably are.
You know, at the time, she was already pregnant. And their daughter was born the next year. I don't think this will come as any surprise, Gibbs, but Danny Rowling was not a very good husband or father.
Well, he had a great role model.
Yeah, right. So there's no expectation of anybody probably that he was going to be a good husband or father, having gone through what he went through and the role models that he had. But apparently, you know, he would take off for days at a time. Wouldn't even tell his family where he was. It really got bad in 77. So they'd been married about 3 years. And his wife says she's going to leave him.
Okay.
And he takes a gun, puts it to his wife's head, and says he's going to kill her. And that was basically it. She divorced him. Which, can't blame her for that.
Good call.
Yeah, good call, because she probably would have been victim number one at some point.
Right.
In 79 is really when he starts to get on the serious criminal path.
Okay.
He starts out by robbing a ton of supermarkets. And for some reason, he likes Winn-Dixie. He's robbing Winn-Dixie's in Alabama and Georgia.
Well, in the South, that's a pretty big.
It is. Yeah. Winn-Dixie's big.
Big store chain.
And he's arrested at one of the robberies in Georgia, and he ultimately confesses to robberies in three states, Alabama, Georgia, and Louisiana.
He says, let me take credit for all of it.
Yeah, it didn't take too long either. It said about a half an hour.
Wow.
It took for them to get him.
He broke right away.
Yeah. So he's sentenced to two concurrent six-year terms for these armed robberies.
Okay.
And this is 79. And it's really only like 3 months later that he's on one of those road gangs.
Yeah.
You know, that I used to see a lot when we would go down south, traveling down 75.
Like the old movie Cool Hand Luke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I used to see it. We'd be traveling like to Florida.
Yeah.
On 75. And you'd get into some of the southern states and look over and you'd still see like some of the chain gangs.
Orange suits.
I don't know.
On
I don't know if they do it. How much they do it anymore.
Yeah.
But so he's on this, they didn't say chain gang, but he's on like some type of gang and they're chopping down trees, you know, putting them to work. And he takes off. He's trying to escape. He gets not very far because they're firing warning shots at him.
Yeah.
And he ends up stopping about 100 yards from, I guess, the boundary of where he was allowed to go anyway. So
no harm, no foul.
No harm, no foul. But I guess, well, I don't know if it was no harm. I don't think he got anything tacked on, but
he was testing.
Yeah. He didn't want to get shot in the back, I assume, yeah. Which they would have. I don't think they would.
Yeah. They probably had the right to
probably have hesitated if he'd have got much farther, because he did commit robberies in so many different states. At some point after he's extradited to Alabama, because he's got to serve 4 years in prison there.
Oh, okay. So he's done in one state. Now he's got to go to the other state and finish his time over there.
Yeah. And, you know, he gets out and really he doesn't miss a beat. I mean, now we're up to like 85-ish.
Okay.
And he's out and he robs a Kroger.
Right.
Not a Dillon's.
But a Kroger.
But a Kroger.
Yeah.
You know, I'm still getting emails about what Dillon's is.
Oh, from BTK?
Yeah. People are still, you know, listening to BTK.
We know what it is now.
Saying what Dillon's is. But I still like it.
Right.
And I still respond to him. So he robbed a Kroger, got $290 whole, stole a car, and he got arrested the following morning. So he's not very good at this.
No, he's not a good robber.
Right. He's prolific, but he's not very good at it.
Yeah.
At getting away with it. Let's put it that way. And again, he pleads guilty and he gets 4 years for that. What's interesting is, you know, this is 86 when he was sentenced,
mm-hmm.
and he escapes.
Okay. He's out.
Yeah. He just walks off. So I think we jump ahead to 89 because this is when Danny Rowling commits his first murder, or murders, I should say.
Right.
So he's in Louisiana, and the bodies of three people are found. Julie Grissom is 24. Her father, Tom Grissom, is found, and Julie's nephew, Sean, who's only 8 years old. The medical examiner says that the time of death is about 2 days prior to the day that Danny Rowling lost his job. So he had been fired a couple days before this murder happened.
Okay.
Now keep in mind that at this point in time, nobody knows who Danny Rowling, I shouldn't say that, because there's a lot of people that know who he is. They don't know that he has any connection to this murder.
Right, he's not on that type of radar.
Yeah, he's not on the radar for this murder at all.
Right.
And it wouldn't be until much later that it would come out. But staying in kind of chronological order, his first murders occur in late 89. He goes on to rob just a ton of other stores. Guy was a prolific robber.
Yeah. Sounds like he...
And he gets away with... Now, maybe he's getting better. Because, you know, in the late 80s, he starts getting away with it.
Yep. So, on August 5th, there was a real estate agent named Janet. And I'm not really good with this last name here. It's F-R-A-K-E. So, Frake.
But you're good with most last names.
Most last names, yeah, of course. So she was, unfortunately, she was raped in her home in Sarasota. And we find out that that was Danny that did that.
How did we find that out?
Yeah. She does a whole interview about it and how she was lucky to... She's the one that says he broke in... He raped her in the kitchen, took her to the bathroom and raped her. But the way she survived is that instead of being scared, she went along with it. And she would start talking to him in a soft voice and played with it instead of screaming. She was terrified inside, she said. But instead, she felt it was her best chance to get out alive was if she could tell he had
bad intentions.
Or yeah. But
murderous intentions.
But she could also tell that he was troubled, and she wanted to try to help relieve that what was on his mind. And so they would, in between the rapes, and she said it was just terrifying. But right. She would just talk to him like a normal person, and he would just spill his guts to her, basically to the point he said, you know, I think you're someone that I could actually date if we weren't doing what I'm doing now. And she's like, of course, she played along with it, but in her mind, she's like,
right,
that's
hell
like,
no.
Yeah. So he holds her captive for a while, rapes her a few times, yes. And then lets her go. And later in an interview at the jail, he recounts this, and he said he had no intentions to ever kill her, but she felt that he would have.
Some of his history would say that he probably would have.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, this was August 5th, and I think, you know, where you're going to be headed here shortly, it's just right. A few weeks down the pike, and we know what happens.
So, yeah, I think that's an interesting story because, obviously, she took a tact that probably saved her life, even though it was horrible for her. She didn't want to do it, but she chose
survival,
a method of survival that we know worked because she survived.
Right.
Now, we don't know whether or not he would have killed her if she would have acted in a different manner.
If she would have fought, or if she would have panicked and screamed. And
the guy doesn't seem to have any hesitation with killing.
No.
And as we know, we heard in the beginning, by all accounts and analysis and all that, he actually enjoys it.
Yes.
So, yeah. Wow. I mean, I hate that she went through that.
Absolutely.
But
I feel for her.
It's amazing that she survived, given...
To tell her story.
Given what we know he's already done and what he's going to go on to do, which is even more heinous.
Yes.
So...
I mean, she survived an animal for sure.
Yes. So that was July.
That was August 5th.
I'm sorry. That was August. He's in Sarasota.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, you know, it's around the same time that for some reason, and I'm not sure why, but he assumes a fake name. And that name is Michael Kennedy Jr. And he checks into a hotel in Gainesville. So he's made his way to Gainesville.
Yeah. A few hours.
Sarasota. Yeah. Not
4 hours maybe.
And this would obviously be the start of him becoming the Gainesville Ripper, because now he's in Gainesville. The part that I thought was strange was that he checked into a hotel, but then he stayed at this like makeshift campsite.
Yeah. That was weird.
And I thought that was very strange.
Maybe that's where he felt comfortable.
When he had a hotel room that he'd paid for under this name, Michael Kennedy Jr., but yet he wanted to stay out kind of in the woods. And later on, after he does these horrible things that we're about ready to talk about, they would find a bunch of things at this campsite. And one of the things that they find is this tape that Rowling makes.
Right.
And I couldn't find the whole thing, but I found a snippet, so I definitely want to play that.
I have to run the rest of my life, but I'm getting pretty good at it. But I don't want you feeling sorry for me. I don't want you worrying about me. I'm a big boy. I'll take care of myself. We're all down here for just a breath. Well, sign off for a little bit. That's something I got to do.
A little hard to hear. My understanding is he's making this tape for his family or for...
Yeah, because he says there's nobody he loves more than his mom and his brothers.
Yeah. So not his dad, obviously.
No.
But he's making this for some of his other family. And, you know, like I said, it was hard to hear, but he's basically saying, don't worry about me. But at the end there, you hear him say, all right, I'm signing off. I've got something I've got to do.
Yes.
This is hours before he's getting ready to go on this murderous spree.
Right.
So, I mean, it's pretty ominous. You know, springtime is all about fresh air, fresh starts, and freshly cleaned homes. And it's the perfect time to give a fresh look at Simply Safe Home Security, the only home security system I use and recommend. Springtime also means more time outside and away from home. And I trust Simply Safe. I love the myriad of features that they offer. And I love the price. Simply Safe was named Best Home Security Systems for 2024 by U.S. News & World Report. The system blankets your whole home in protection. There are so many sensors, from detecting break-ins, fires, floods, and more. Plus, they have a variety of indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch over your property day and night. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day. So you get fast emergency response and dispatch when you need it most. There's no contract, and they have a 60-day money-back guarantee. So you can try Simply Safe risk-free. Don't absolutely love it? Send the system back for a full refund. Simply Safe has given Gibby and I and many of our listeners real peace of mind. We want you to have it too. Get 20% off any new Simply Safe system when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring. Just visit simplysafe.com/TCAT. That's simplysafe.com/TCATT. There's no safe like Simply Safe. True crime all the time is sponsored by BetterHelp. I want to ask everybody one question. How is your social battery right now? Does it have a ton of energy or are you drained? And why is it at that level? You know, it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin. What's the right amount of socializing for you and how do you recharge? You know, maybe you're the type of person who thrives around people or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I think therapy is a very powerful tool for learning positive coping skills and helping to empower you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. No more hopping in the car, driving, and sitting in a waiting room. You can do your entire session from the comfort of your own home. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/TCAT today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/TCATT. All right, Gibbs, so we're at August 24th, and this is where Danny Rowling breaks into the house of two female college freshmen. He's armed with a pistol and a knife. Now, some of these details are a little tough, but you know, he covers both of their mouths with duct tape. And so the first girl, her name's Sonia Larson.
She's upstairs.
Yep. She's 17 years old. College freshman, like we said. He then moves to the second girl, Christina Powell. Tapes her mouth, binds her hands, takes all of her clothes off. He's, you know, fondles her. He forces her to perform, you know, sexual acts on him.
Yes.
And he rapes her. And then after that, he stabs her 5 times and kills her. That's bad. But then he goes on to return to Sonia's body, who he's already killed.
Right.
He's already stabbed her to death and he rapes her. So I don't know. I don't know if that's postmortem, but it sounds like it is.
Yeah.
The way I understood it. He flees the apartment, throws all the evidence in a dumpster in the apartment complex there, and he rides away on his bike. But something very strange happens while he's riding away on his bike. He's feeling nauseous as he's riding. Why he's riding on a bike, I don't know. I know I can get to that part, but he's feeling nauseous, which he should by what he's just done, committed these terrible acts. But he's riding along on the bike and he reaches into this bag that he's carrying and he finds one of the girl's nipples.
Oh, gross.
In this bag.
So he sliced off the nipples?
Yes. I mean, this guy, I know we've covered some sickies before, but this guy is something else.
Well, he was, to slice off the nipples and, okay.
Well, and if he commit, you know, if he committed necrophilia, I think that's a first for us.
Yeah.
On this podcast, at least. So that's August 24th. The next day, August 25th, he kills another girl, Krista Hoyt.
Yep.
She's 18 years old. This, now, I guess I have to say he's ratcheting it up because this one's maybe worse than before.
Yeah.
With what he does, I mean, he completely beheads her.
And slices the nipples off on her as well.
He has this thing about slicing off nipples. And he, and for some reason in this one, he displays the body.
Yeah. And don't forget, he cut her from chest bone down to the pubic bone as well on her. And then, as you said, he displays the body in a sexual position.
Yeah.
Bent over.
On the edge of the bed or something like that. But then he puts her head on a shelf on the other side of the room.
And I think part of my research was, is that when he did this, it was, she was probably dead for an hour and a half, 2 hours when he decided to take the head off. So he hung out in her small little apartment or dorm, it was apartment or dorm, for that period of time.
With her dead body.
With her dead body before he, you know, cleaned up and did that. Yeah, I don't know. It's sick.
So the next day, August 26th, this is the first day that Gainesville police become involved. And what happens is the parents of both Sonia Larson and Christina Powell, who we know were killed on 2 days earlier, they have called the police because obviously they can't get in touch with their daughters. I think the Powells said that they were scheduled to drive down that morning and meet with her, but obviously they're not, nobody's answering the door.
No.
But they see her car still parked there. They know something's wrong. And the same way with Sonia Larson, her mother had called the police because she hadn't been able to get in touch with her for a couple days. By what I read, Gibbs, I think they had like 20 officers at one point. They had backup from, I guess they were on high alert.
Okay.
For whatever reason. It seems like a lot, not knowing. It doesn't in hindsight, because we know what happened. But at this point, you just have two girls who haven't checked in.
Right.
But apparently they had a bad feeling because they had 20 armed officers that went into this apartment.
To this complex.
And obviously they find the grisly scene that we talked about.
Yeah.
You know, the media is swarming all over at this point. I'm not really sure why that the media was there so quickly, or maybe it's that word spread of what the scene was and then the media showed up. I'm not sure, but the police tell the media that these two young women had been murdered, that somebody had forced their way in. And they give a time frame of between 11:30, August 23rd, and 4 p.m., August 26th. So it's a pretty big time frame. Now, we know it happened on the 24th, so they're right, but it happened closer to the beginning of the time frame. So that's Sunday. Monday night, they have the first press conference. And at this point, you have to imagine that there's all these rumors going around. Two women have been killed on the campus. And keep in mind, they don't know yet about Krista Hoyt.
Not yet.
So they know two women are killed. The police are trying to reassure the public, but you know that's pretty tough when the public knows what grisly thing played out. And apparently, you know, the phone lines at some point were so jammed that people couldn't even, the Gainesville campus phone lines, I'm assuming, got jammed.
Well, from parents calling kids. And I mean, I actually had a good friend that was on campus during this. So, it's been such a long time. I don't even stay in contact with her anymore, but at the time, I remember visiting there in 91.
Really?
So right after some of this, it's kind of strange.
You're luckily we're not doing True Crime All the Time Unsolved.
Right.
Because you would be a suspect.
I'd be a suspect.
Yeah. You'd just
be
put
a suspect
yourself
in a lot of things.
You just put yourself as suspect.
Yeah.
So, like I said, the kids are worried at campus. The parents are worried, as would be natural, because they don't know what's going on. Is this a serial killer on the loose? Is this a one horrible event? So I just got to play a little clip of some of the students that they captured back then.
There's a lot of fear on the campus. A lot of girls are very scared.
It's the biggest fear that it's another Ted Bundy, that it's just someone who enjoys going around seeing people hurt and mutilated.
Go home. I mean, better wait half a semester to be alive than die tomorrow and never go to school.
So that second girl, Gibb, she hit it right on the head, right?
Yeah.
Somebody running around that just likes to murder people and see them mutilated. A third girl hit it on the head as well. She's like, I should just go home.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sit around here and wait to be murdered. And I know if it was my daughter, I'd be driving down there to get her and say,
absolutely.
Hey, just come home. You start again after all this is.
Wait till they find the crazy guy and then you can start your semester over.
Or actually, let's just switch schools.
That might be better.
And call it a day.
But I mean, it's so crazy that even like the sorority houses hire full-time security guards.
Oh, yeah.
That's how crazy it got.
At some point, they discover Krista Hoyt, and that's a grisly scene. That adds to the paranoia.
Sure.
So they start a task force because they pretty much know at this point that these three murders are linked. And so they're looking for a really bad dude, most likely a serial killer. One of the things that tied the two incidents together is they said at both of the scenes there was underwear missing.
Mm.
So that was something that police, I guess, put together to help.
That he kept the underwear?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think the nipple cutting off had to be part of it as well.
Yeah, I think that would have tied them together. Small community, too. I mean, Gainesville is not a big community.
So, you know, body parts missing and the same body part.
Right.
That's pretty much a no-brainer. They were able to determine that the same type of knife had been used on all three victims.
Okay.
I mean, obviously, they knew that the two girls that were in the...
And the girls all kind of look similar, too, from what I understand. They were all brunettes and... same built, same height and all that kind of stuff. So
he had a type.
Yeah, it seemed like it.
Probably that he stalked and was looking for. But this knife was a 4 to 6 inch blade, and they were able to determine that it was a similar knife that was used on all three girls.
They just didn't know the make of it. They just knew that it was a 4 to 6 inch blade.
Yeah, We find out, though, that it's a very specific knife.
Okay.
Right?
We do.
What is it?
Well, because I have one, I'm worried that you're going to say I'm a suspect again.
What is it?
It's a K-bar.
Yeah, it's a military-style K-bar knife.
Probably one of the best knives ever made.
That Gibby says he owns and should be suspect in multiple states.
Probably.
Somebody's going to be listening there and put you in a database or something.
Yeah. I'm a very loving, caring person.
So the task force is on it, right? That's where we're at right now.
Right. Now, just a strange side note. In this small town, so on August 27th, about around the time they find Krista's body, the local First Union Bank branch in Gainesville was robbed. And so a lot of the speculation is that it was him. This is one way he was able to get funds to stay in the area. I just wanted to put that out there.
Same day. That the robbery occurs. We know that Rowling breaks into an apartment of Tracy Paulus. She's 23.
Right.
And Manuel Taboda, who's also 23, he killed them both. The strange part about it is that he didn't do any of the mutilations or any of the stranger aspects that he carried out in the other murders. There's thought that maybe he could have been interrupted before he could carry out some of these things.
And do you think he knew that Manuel was there?
I doubt it, because I don't think he... I think, like you said, he had a type. I think he was interested in hurting and raping women.
Right.
I don't think he... I think he would have went on and picked somebody else.
And from what I understand, Manuel was in pretty good shape and gave him Danny quite the fight.
Right.
You know, it wasn't an easy... He wasn't an easy victim, put it that way.
I would, if I had to hazard a guess, I would say he probably made a mistake in either his scouting, stalking, whatever you want to call it. But that it really ratcheted up the panic, because not only are two more bodies found.
One's a male.
One of them's male.
No, I think there was probably a lot of panic for a lot of the female college students, because all the victims were female up to that point.
It caused a new level of fear.
Yes.
In the women as well, because they probably thought they were probably having either their boyfriend or their male friends
around at all times.
Yeah. And now you see that's not even doing any good, because he killed, you know, a man and a woman together. And like you said, this guy probably wasn't any pushover.
Yeah, he was a high school football player that went to the college. And so he was in decent shape for sure.
Yeah. So there, you know, maybe they had a sense of security by having male friends stay with
them. But you're right, because in all accounts and all the research, they talk about how all the sorority houses added full-time security. You know, so after this, you wonder, did the fraternity houses do the same or
yeah,
not?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
But anyway, the whole town at this point's got to be in panic mode. Now, it's after this that they latch on to their first suspect. It's a man named Edward Humphrey. There were a number of people that had come into contact with him over the last month or so that had found him to be kind of odd and had put his name out there, to had contacted police, basically, is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
And saying, you got to take a look at this guy. He's
a little unstable.
Yeah. He's strange. He might be unstable. He might be a good candidate. One of the biggest things that landed him as a suspect was the apartment where Tracy and Manuel were killed, which was the last one we just talked about. The manager there reported that Humphrey had been asked to leave the apartments because he had been fighting, got in a fight with his roommates, who they all said he was weird. He walked in his sleep. So, I mean, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you saw a picture of this guy. He's got like these massive scars
right
on his face. He's got a real distinctive look, almost a scary look.
I also heard accounts that his room where he, you know, at his apartment, that one half was like super clean. And the investigator said on the other half, it was just a mess, distraught. And it made him think, you know, this guy's got a little...
It's almost like split, right?
Yeah.
Like, is that a split personality?
Exactly. And that's what the investigator was saying. When they went and looked at that room, they thought, this guy's not right.
Well, he'd been in some trouble.
Yeah.
He'd been arrested for disorderly conduct and some things like that. So the police were compiling, I think, all these reports of Humphrey's violent behavior and strange behavior. But some of it was violent. You know, apparently he'd been violent towards his grandmother. There was other reports that, you know, he'd pulled a knife on some people at a fraternity house when they didn't let him come in. They stopped him from coming into a party or something like that. He was definitely a strange character.
Yeah, he was.
You know, I don't know what issues ultimately he had, but so they begin surveillance. around-the-clock surveillance because they think that he's the Gainesville Ripper. And they go as far as, I mean, they're covering him with helicopters at one point as he's driving his car. Now, on October 30th, Ed Humphreys gets put into custody. And it's over, again, another violent argument that he has with his grandmother where he ends up hitting her and the police are called and he's taken into custody. But while he's in custody, this is the time that the FBI uses to interrogate him about the murders.
Okay.
So he's really in custody for probably like assault, battery.
Something else, but they take that opportunity.
Right, he's in custody, so... Right. They start interrogating him, and what I had read was he was interrogated and questioned for 24 hours straight at one point.
Wow.
Without an attorney.
Okay.
And when his public defender arrived, they sent him away. Now, I don't know. I read that somewhere. I don't know. I have that in my notes. I don't know how... you know, accurate that is, but it could be accurate because I think what they were saying, Gibbs, is that he didn't need a public defender because he hadn't been charged.
He hasn't been arrested yet.
Yeah, hadn't been arrested especially in regards to the Gainesville killings.
Yeah.
As there was no evidence against him. They didn't have anything. But he was charged with assault and you don't get a public defender for that, do you?
I don't know if you need one or not, but I know that
I'm asking you because I assume you've been charged with assault.
No, I'm a loving person.
I'm really putting it to you today.
I know it.
You got the K-bar, you're assaulting people.
Yeah. I only take care of business when I have to.
TCB.
TCB.
It gets to the point where his grandmother drops the charges.
Right. She says, I can't do this to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they still won't let him out because they have a strong suspicion that he may be this Gainesville Ripper. And the next morning, the police reinstate the assault charges on him.
Yeah, and set a bail for about $1 million.
Right.
I mean,
so
makes it tough.
The person that he assaulted dropped the charges, doesn't want to press charges. I've never heard of $1 million bond for a minor assault charge. And well, by all accounts, he had never been charged with anything before.
They're probably trying to calm the city down. And
yeah. You know, he can't get out of jail with $1 million bond, I assume. So he's just sitting in jail waiting for a trial.
Which everybody at this point, I'm assuming they think that he's probably the killer. He's guilty.
Yeah.
That's why they have him. That's why he's got a million-dollar bond.
The media sure does because they descend.
Bell. Yeah.
And, you know, in this way, I feel bad for him because obviously we know he's not the killer. We know who the real killer is. But he and his family get put through the ringer in the newspapers, in the... And you know, television media.
Police don't really clarify anything, do they?
No.
They don't say, oh, oops.
No, and I think at some point they say, the police go as far as saying he's a good suspect. The media runs with that. And I think at some point there's a headline that says, number one suspect with his picture. Now, that's pretty rough. Right. For not only you, you're already in jail, but your family
right,
and everybody around you. And the police, I think, like you say, they don't do anything to kind of clarify that, to set it straight. Because at this point, they have maybe a dozen different suspects or more.
Yeah.
But the only name that's been released to the media is Ed Humphrey.
Right. Out of all the close to 7,000 leads, yeah. He's the only name that comes out of it.
And 12 or 13 real suspects. Right. All right, so I'm going to play a clip about Ed.
I don't believe he would be capable of it. He's so sloppy, he sure wouldn't be capable of cleaning up after it.
Is it possible that the police, because they're under so much pressure and everything, that they're afraid right now to drop the case on Ed, since my brother's already been turned into a national monster.
So just kind of echoing what we were saying.
Sure.
I don't know if the he's too sloppy to clean up for it defense holds up, but...
It must have been Grandma.
I think that was Grandma.
Yeah. So they have no evidence.
They've got no evidence, but they are able to convince a judge to get a search warrant for his apartment and his car. Now, it takes them 4 days, and that's got to tell you something. Because normally, when they want to fast track it, I think they can get it done.
Yeah.
So the fact that it took 4 days, you know, they had to find a judge that was willing to...
They had to do a lot of convincing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's what I think.
They go to his apartment with the warrant. They spend several, I don't know, 3-4 hours there.
Yeah.
And they come out with nothing.
Nada.
Nothing to...
Bubkiss.
Yep. Can't do anything. So then what?
Well, because he didn't do it, right? So
right.
Obviously you can't find any evidence from right. somebody that didn't do it.
But they make the effort and they come up empty-handed.
Yeah. But even after that, I think, I don't know if this is what you're getting at, but even after that, he is still viewed as the prime suspect.
He is.
You know, my wife and I, we both use Rakuten when we shop online to help save money. My wife uses it more than I do because, well, let's face it, she shops more than I do. Rakuten is the most rewarding way to shop and save because members earn cash back on everything that they buy. Rakuten is a shopping platform that partners with over 3,500 stores across every category. You're already shopping at your favorite stores. Why not save while doing it? It really is a no-brainer. I use it for all my techie stuff at stores like Best Buy. My wife uses it at stores like Sephora and Macy. Best of all, membership is free and it's easy to sign up. It's very easy to use. Cashback rates change daily. So start all your shopping at Rakuten.com or get the Rakuten app to start saving today. Your cash back really adds up.
This episode is brought to you by June's Journey. Unleash your inner sleuth and step into the glamorous 1920s. Uncover scandalous family secrets and solve the mysterious murder of June Parker's sister. With dazzling hidden object scenes and riveting storylines in each chapter, June's Journey invites you to a thrilling era of mystery and romance. And now, June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Your adventure awaits.
So they know they haven't found any evidence. They've got nothing linking him. You mentioned it before. The public perception that the police have the killer in custody. How much did that mean in calming the fears of...
Well, I think it went a whole lot. And the reason I think it went a whole lot, too, is because the other part of this story of him is he's in custody. Well, just think about it. Up until he was in custody, he had these three sets of terrible killings. And now they haven't found any. There's no new killings.
Right.
So he's in custody. Nothing's happening, so we must have the killer.
Well, and what that causes is it causes all of these kids that have left to come back to school.
Because it's safe now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they think it's safe. Now, they ultimately do try him on those assault charges.
Yeah.
Even though his grandmother testifies that
he didn't do it.
Nothing even happened.
Yeah.
He got 22 months in a state hospital.
Well, yeah. It was probably good that he did.
No, he probably needed to be.
Yeah.
I don't know, in a state hospital, but he needed to be in some type of...
If he's listening, if he could email you and let you know.
Stop telling people to email. Again, I think what we're conveying is we felt bad, or we feel bad for him.
Yeah.
His
family and him went through that.
Yes.
Yes.
The guy definitely has some mental deficiencies. There's no doubt about that. He didn't kill anybody. He didn't do anything really.
But even
wrong.
When he was released, he was still considered a top suspect.
Yes.
So.
Well, and also this state hospital apparently that he was in, most of the inmates were said to have been convicted murderers.
Yeah.
So So here's a guy with no record, had never really done anything wrong, gets put in this state hospital with a bunch of convicted murderers who also probably have some real mental issues as well, but they're maybe a little more apt to take them out physically
than he was.
I mean, that's just, you know, so he's not released until September of 91.
Yeah.
Which I think is about when you said you were down there.
It was.
So you got out, yeah. And then
that's about right. Came my K bar.
Came up to Ohio. But like you said, still considered a suspect.
Yes.
And
again, why is it? So how many months go by? All this time goes by. No new killings.
And that's why.
Sure.
Right? They don't know who it is. And so.
But they know they took this guy off the street. And everything stopped.
And everybody felt better.
Right. The community went back to normal. Clearly, there was no... I mean, my friend was going to school there. I went to visit. There was no, oh, you need to watch out, be careful, right? It was all done.
Yeah.
It wasn't even a thought. Yeah. So.
All right. So we got to finish up with Ed Humphrey. We know he didn't do it, but interesting part to the story, no doubt. As far as I know, Gibb, and I think to me this is kind of a sad part, is Ed Humphrey never received any type of public apology or, you know, communication from the police saying, you know, hey, we had the wrong guy. Not even admitting wrongdoing. I mean, they didn't even, as far as I know, ever come out and say, you know, we thought he was a suspect, you know, we went down the path was wrong, or whatever you want to call it. But let's get back to Danny Rowling. I mean, he's the topic of this story. And as you've said, he hasn't killed anybody during this whole Ed Humphrey saga.
Mm-mm.
But he does steal a car and he heads for Ocala, Florida, where, again, he really likes these Winn-Dixies, man. He tries to rob a Winn-Dixie right during the peak hours of Saturday afternoon. You know, right when the Winn-Dixie is the busiest, that's right. When you want to rob it.
Yeah.
Because this guy's a flipping...
Yeah, he's a
mastermind.
Exactly.
This is September 8th, 1990. Rowling forces the manager at gunpoint to empty the safe. The store's bookkeeper kind of sees what's going on, but she's not kind of involved. So she's able to phone the police and tell them that they're being robbed. The police are on their way right as Rowling is leaving, heading to get to his getaway car. So I guess what happened, Gibbs, is the store manager who, you know, Rowling had at gunpoint, he follows him out as he leaves to get into his car, and he's able to tell police make, model, license plate number.
Gotcha.
But they're already rolling anyway. I think they, you know, they're in, however it happens, a high speed chase ensues.
Okay.
Rowling ends up crashing his car and tries to take off on foot, but doesn't get very far, and, you know, he's ultimately arrested.
They got him and they sent him off to jail.
Yeah. But at this point, they don't know he's the Gainesville Ripper.
No, he just goes off to jail for robbery. What kind of sentence did he get? Do we even know?
Well, I think at this point, he's just being held. He's actually waiting on an indictment.
Oh, okay.
For the robbery.
So he's just.
And I think they had him on a bunch of other robberies.
So he's down at county just.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Rowling's jailed in Ocala for the Winn-Dixie robbery. And like you said, a few other things, right? Probably evading arrest and...
Yeah, but at this point, not the Gainesville Ripper.
Not at this point. It's around January 24th of 91 that the authorities start putting things together. They have DNA from the murder sites and... they have his DNA, and so now he becomes a prime suspect.
Because the DNA matches.
Because the DNA matches. Obviously. Right. Okay. Right.
So they got him matched up on DNA at this point, Gibbs, right? They know he's the Gainesville Ripper. He's right. Arrested.
Yep.
He's pretty cooperative with the police at first. So I want to play this clip, Gibby, because it cracks me up. But this is rolling at one point where he's in court.
Okay.
Not at his trial, I don't think, but maybe in the early stages. Like a
hearing?
Maybe.
Okay.
Address the court. I recall the day I first saw you. I reached out to say I love you. But it was hard to say I couldn't touch you. And all you want to be, deep or shallow.
Okay, excuse me, Mr. Rollins.
Down
Mr.
the path
Rollins.
You choose
Mr. Rollins.
To follow.
Mr. Rollins.
Tell me, baby, what were my...
So they're trying to stop him, and he's singing. I mean, the guy actually can sing.
And you know, so you played a tape earlier from the campsite.
Yeah. And I think there was more singing on that.
Yeah, I think before he went into his little speech, you know, that he gave to his family... He's actually playing, sounds like a guitar maybe, and he's singing a...
Did you say guitar?
A guitar. He's playing a guitar, and he's singing a like a folk song or something like that. And
guy's a sadistic bastard, but he's got,
good pipes.
Halfway decent voice.
Yeah.
But I got a kick out of it because the judge or the bailiff or whoever it is like yelling his name, trying to get him to stop, and he just keeps on singing.
Yeah. We know he's not stable.
So one of the issues that he had, though, as he's in jail, and I think this happens with some, they can't keep their mouth shut. They're talking all the time.
Yep.
And apparently he was confessing to basically anybody that wanted to hear in the jail system. That he had done it. Now, one thing that happens is he forms this friendship with one inmate named Bobby Lewis. Bobby Lewis apparently is, at least at that point, was the only man to have escaped from Florida's death row. And I think this is one of the things that Rowling was after. He knew he was done for unless he could figure out a way to escape. He'd already escaped out of how many situations? We talked about it before.
Yeah, he's not afraid of trying to make the attempt.
Unless somebody shoots at him and then he's going to stop and turn around.
But, right.
So Rowling has told Lewis about every detail of the murders.
He even...
Tells him why?
Well, he even tells him that, I mean, basically it's premeditated. Because he tells him he thought about starting killings back in the 80s.
Yeah. Right.
So, I mean, he's confessing that he had this desire to kill when he was in early prison, right, back in the 80s.
Well, so they try to escape, or they try to plan an escape. It never happens. But to kind of piggyback on what you were saying about him planning in prison, he also planned the number, right? He killed 8 people.
Yes.
According to him, that was the number of people that he wanted to kill because it had something to do with the number of years that I think the prison system had taken. He had spent in prison for some of those armed robberies.
Okay.
I could be off on that, but.
So they owed him that many, many years. So that's how many people.
Because
eventually they tied the Grissom spin to his.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about how that happens,
right?
Because it happens towards the end. But so the escape never takes place, right? They try it or they try to plan it, doesn't work. And it's at this point that Rowling wants to confess to the murders, but he only wants to do it through Bobby Lewis for whatever reason.
Okay.
He doesn't want to say the words himself. But he wants to say them through Bobby Lewis.
Hmm.
So I got a clip of old Bobby.
and rolled her over on her stomach, taking what is called a military K-bar knife and hit her one time in the heart region. Then he cuts the head off and placed it, as I described, on the shelf.
So just a snippet, right? But that is Bobby Lewis basically recounting every detail of the of Danny Rowling's murders.
Yeah.
Because for whatever reason, Danny didn't want to do it himself. He wanted Bobby to do it. So after that is done, after he's confessed to that, this is where the frog demon comes into play, because Rowling starts to shift all the responsibility for these murders to the evil side of his personality.
What's he called his frog demon?
Gemini.
Gemini.
But he calls it Gemini. I got a clip of that.
There's been many a psychiatrist that has been interested in what I'm about to tell you, gentlemen. I have dealt with different personalities all my life. One personality is a gentleman named Enad, who is a Jesse James type. He's not a good person, but he's not really an evil person. But the person that I really have struggled against to prevent ruling my thoughts and stuff is a person called Gemini, who he is evil. Period.
Okay. This is not some type of insanity.
No, I'm not saying that.
He wants you to fully understand.
I want to understand it too.
That he wants to
as much as anybody, believe it or not, because I'm going to tell you guys, Danny's not that person. Anybody that has ever known me known that Danny just wanted to be a good person. But I can't go back over my life and say, yank this out of my life and that out of my life and then say, well, then there stands the good. I never wanted to come this way. Believe in God and my judge, I never wanted to come this way. But I'm here and now I got to live with this. What? And I ain't got nobody to blame but myself. You gentlemen are honorable people. I wish I could be you, but I wouldn't want you to be me. I wouldn't want anybody to be me. People say Danny has no remorse. They don't know Danny.
I don't know why I get a kick out of that, because he sounds like a sniveling little biatch.
Right.
And then he's saying just weird stuff. I mean, I think that Gemini stuff's all crap.
So the name Gemini that he uses comes from the movie The Exorcist 3, which is the main character in that movie that severs a head and disembowels one of the victims. So this is what he's channeling through...
Yeah,
himself at this time. You know?
I think the police are... I mean, they know it's all made up bull. Yeah. And I actually don't think I've ever seen that one. I've seen the first two, but I don't think
normally
I've seen three.
Three, four.
Once you get to three or four, it's not very good. Getting
pretty bad.
So I think where we go from here, Gibbs, is he's done this confession through Bobby Lewis, but through his public defender, he's starting to say he wants to plead not guilty or plead guilty. I mean, he's going back and forth.
Okay.
I think a couple of times.
So on all accounts, we know that he has been indicted on 5 counts of first degree murder and 3 counts of sexual battery and a count for armed burglary. At this point, he's not pleading guilty to any of this.
Well, no, and I think his public defender wants him to plead not guilty.
Is it all about the, I don't know, this is Florida. Do they have the death penalty?
Oh, yeah. You know Florida has a death penalty, okay, for sure. But I think what his public defender is telling him is that if he pleads not guilty, he can use Rowling's horrible early childhood.
How I grew up and,
yes,
oh, poor me.
Basically, his whole story of abuse and... Yeah. Also, he's got some of these psychiatric evaluations.
So they did some of those then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which established some type of mental illness.
I have the feeling
he could. Not a frog demon, but.
But I have the feeling he could manipulate that stuff.
I think he was very manipulative. Yeah. But to your point, his public defender's warning him, if you plead guilty, you're probably going to get the death sentence.
Okay.
And if you don't, then maybe we have an opportunity through these mitigating factors to, not going to get him off, but maybe he doesn't get death.
Because I know at one point he just says, I can't put the family through this. He's told that they're going to, at the trial, they're going to bring out all the photographs
right.
of the victims.
And that's what he doesn't want. Now, whether, I don't know how much of it is for the families of these victims.
Yeah.
If he's really
concerned
about that, or if he just doesn't want his heinous acts to be displayed. I don't know.
Right.
You just don't know with these people.
Right.
What's real and what's not. But, you know, that is a part of it. He doesn't want those to be shown. And it's really about a week before the trial's getting ready to start that he signs a plea.
So he makes a deal?
Plea.
No. So there's no deal. So he just signs it to spare the victim's family the torture of going through a trial.
But it really doesn't, Gibbs, and here's why. Because when it gets to the death penalty phase where the state is going to argue for, during that part of it, the prosecutor brings all of that stuff out anyway.
Oh, so
he shows all the pictures
to help drive home.
Yeah.
That he should get.
Right.
Okay.
So it kind of backfired in his face anyway. So the prosecutor rolls out, you know, DNA matches. They found semen at all three sites. They found some items at his campsite where he made that tape, that weird tape that we heard.
Right.
Which included a screwdriver, duct tape, some pants that were stained with Manuel Tabota's blood. Remember, that was the man that was killed. They got a handwriting match from a note at one of the scenes. I don't know what kind of note he wrote. Apparently, they matched his handwriting. They found your K-bar knife. No, they didn't find the knife, but they found proof that Rowling purchased a K-bar knife. And then he gave it to you at some point in time.
Sometime, yeah.
And they had a bunch of other stuff. They had all of his confessions. Remember, he'd confessed a bunch of different times to different people and through Bobby Lewis, and all of that had been videotaped. On the defense's side, all they could do was really talk about Danny Rowling being a victim of constant physical abuse, emotional abuse as a child. And that was true, right? We detailed all that out in the beginning.
We did.
And, you know, I think they brought on some psychiatrists who had spent a lot of time evaluating Danny Rowling. They also had neighbors, family members who had really witnessed Danny Rowling being treated the way he was by his father. But that's really all they had. Apparently, the best thing that they had was a videotape testimony by Claudia, who was Danny's mom. And by all accounts, that was the most revealing. And it was the most humanizing for Danny Rowling.
Sure. She probably broke down into the tape, everything that happened during his childhood.
Yeah. And told
that story, right?
And I'm sure she told the truth. The problem was it didn't sway the jury. It took them about 2 days, I think, of deliberations, but they ended up deciding that he should receive the death penalty on all five counts. Then it goes to the judge, right, Gibbs, and the judge is checking it, making sure that nothing's going to get thrown out on appeal.
Yeah, then he'll lay the final judgment out.
Yeah, which he did. He sentenced Danny Rowling to death for all five victims.
I've been running from first one thing and then another all my life. There are some things that you just can't run from, and this being one of those.
Yeah, okay. You can't run from it.
Can't run from death penalty.
No, you can't run from the death penalty.
So March 30th, he confesses to the murder of three people in Shreveport that we talked about that happened in early, or sometime in 1989.
Yeah.
So he finally comes forward and he says, hey, it was me.
Right.
I did that. I mean, it doesn't add anything. He's already got the death penalty.
Yes.
But at least, I guess it gives closure to the family, to the relatives of the family.
And I think you got to give him credit, I guess. I hate to say that because he's such a piece of, you know what. But
right.
I guess he didn't have to do that. He could have been one of those people that said, screw you. I'm never going to say it, but he did.
Yeah.
And so that's something. So Rowling's execution was carried out on October 25th, 2006. It was done by lethal injection. He was pronounced dead at 6:13 PM. Apparently he showed no remorse. He refused to make any comments. Didn't offer any apologies to the relatives of any of his victims, several of whom I guess were present at his execution. What I read, Gibbs, was he just wanted to sing a song.
Yeah, he just sang a song and repeated that one line over. Do you know what that song was? He sang a song and he repeated the line, "None greater than thee, O Lord." And he repeated that.
So Rowling chose to confess to the murder, those three murders in Louisiana. Right before his execution, he read this. And this is how we'll end the show. The confession reads, "In order to fulfill all things that no stone be unturned, hereby I make a formal written statement concerning the murders of Julie, Tom, and Sean Grissom, in my hometown of Shreveport, Louisiana. Hal Carter, Julie Grissom's former fiancé, is 100% innocent, totally pure of that crime. I and I alone am guilty. It was my hand that took those precious lights out of this old dark world. With all my heart and soul, would I could bring them back. Being a native son of Shreveport, I can only offer this confession of deep felt remorse over the loss of such fine, outstanding souls, have wept an ocean of tears by which mournful doth float upon a sea of regret." Ah, I ain't buying none of it. Nah, I think the guy was...
I don't think he regretted anything.
I don't think he regretted a single... I guess I'm so jaded anymore. I don't believe anybody.
Yeah.
On this stuff that we talk about.
I think he was one warped dude.
Yep. Well, that's it for another episode of True Crime All the Time. For Mike
and Gibby,
stay safe and keep your own time ticking. I want to tell everybody about a game that I've been playing recently called Two Dots. You know, primarily, Two Dots is a puzzle-based game. You have to connect at least two dots of the same color to make a move. And then those connected dots are removed from the game area, and the dots above them drop down until they hit other dots or the floor beneath. But there's a variety of game modes. There's this really cool one called Scavenger Hunt, which is a really relaxing hidden object game. There's different levels to the game that are grouped into worlds, and it's very satisfying to move up. There's over 5,000 1,000 unique puzzles and fun levels. And with all the different gameplay modes, it really makes the gaming experience unique and exciting with every single puzzle. The visuals are amazing, and the in-game music I found to be very soothing. You can even challenge your friends on Facebook to make it competitive, link up, and see how your dot skills match up. And best of all, it's free to download. And you don't need Wi-Fi to play it. You can play it offline as well. Think you have what it takes to solve some fun puzzles? Download Two Dots now for free on Android or iOS.